everybody. I figure you're not going to come down here. I'll come to you. If I'm too close, just push me back, okay? I'll pace. It's truly an honor to be here. Thank you, Rabbi. Rabbi Axelrod is one of the few individuals that I've had the opportunity throughout my entire life almost to know, who's a true visionary, someone who cares tremendously for Klal Yisrael. And I was here, this wasn't this nice, but I was in Queens College. I graduated Queens College for Knowledge in 1999. It was awesome. I don't know how it is now, but back then it was awesome. There's a lot of people here that really still very, very close with. So it was great coming back to the campus since first time since then, walking around, telling the guards, this, and then as if they care. I'm like, I was here in 99, and this is the thing. They're like, yeah, whatever. Do you have a pass? I'm like, no, I was here in 99. Like, no one cares. Do you have a pass? So it's nice to be back to those guards. It's great to be here, and thank you, Rabbi, for the opportunity. I want to talk a little bit about, we're 5 days away from the greatest day of the year. So I want to talk a little bit about why it is. Maybe share a couple of ideas as to what we could look forward to come this weekend. My mom's a psychologist, so she teaches me some of that stuff that she does. And one of the things that she uses to try to get an emotion out of her patients is something called word associations. What you do is you sit with somebody and you tell them something, and then you get their immediate reaction, no time to think. You know, pizza, food, awesome, love eating it. Or some people, carbs are the enemy, terrible, whatever it is, depending on where you're holding. If I would do word association with everyone in the room, and I would say Yom Kippur, what would your response be? Torture, hell, hopefully it's over. Best day of the year is the night after Yom Kippur, right? What's the greatest night of the year? Matzah Yom Kippur, right? Because I remember, when you're one bagel in and two cups of oranges, you're like, I don't got to do this for 365 more days. Awesome. I never met anyone when they were gotten tons like Rosh Chodesh, Elul, he's like, yes, like, amazing. Yom Kippur is like the day we just can't wait to be done with. So like we pump ourselves up just to get through it. So we'll go to classes and hear things, just so we get enough inspiration and motivation so that we can survive through Yom Kippur. And then when we're done, we look back and go, Sukkot, I'm going to eat my brains out and then I'm clear. But for some reason, the Chachamim say something totally different. The Mishnah says, Lo ayu yom tovim ki Yisrael ki chamisha asar ba'av, which is the dating day, which maybe we'll understand why, and Yom HaKippurim. So like, were the rabbis so out of touch? Did they like love fasting? Is that what was going on back then? Was it like before television or anything else? Like nothing to do? So like fasting Yom Kippur was like the fun thing that they went? Like how in the world do the rabbis teach us that this is supposed to be one of the greatest Yom Kippur of the year? So I want to try to explain a little bit what Yom Kippur is. We think Yom Kippur is like the appellate court. We show up on Rosh Hashanah, we do the best that we can, we hope we get in the good book. We're taught, sort of, that, like, you know, chances are you're not in the good book, because those are, like, for tzaddikim, and, you know, between me and you, like, please. And you're, like, a Beinoni or a Rasha. Like, D or F. D or F. D or F. Then maybe we squeak out as a Beinoni. We bump along the way this week, and if we're lucky, and if we scream loud enough, then maybe by Ne'ilah, if we're crying, then maybe we get put into the D-cat, into the Beinoni, and we eke out a lot. That's sort of it. At least that's how I was sort of thought of it. And like, how does God judge? I don't know. It's like color war. Like, the louder we sing, the more points we get. And if we can hear a little louder, can I get a little louder? And you're about to fall, but you're still screaming, God, I love you. God's like, great. Bonus points for blue. You win. The guy's talking in the back. Zap, zap. Good luck driving in December. I don't think so. But you, I love you. As if. This is like color war central. And the Yom Kippur is like the appellate court. So like, if you didn't do well Rosh Hashanah, like, you still have a chance. But that would make almost no sense, because why is there even an appellate court in any system? The only reason why you need an appellate court for anything is because you don't necessarily trust the trial court. Anyone here is pre-law, you know that the checks and balances of a good judicial system is in place because you don't trust the lower courts. You want to give them a check and a balance in case they made a mistake. But if God is doing the judging and God is doing the reviewing, why do you need two processes for it? He's not going to change his mind. You think he's like, well, I'm not so sure. Maybe in 10 days you'll get it? It should take 1 second Rosh Hashanah. He makes a call and it's game over. We got to wait the week and come back for the appellate court? And the answer is, shocker, it's not the appellate court. God knows exactly what he's doing. And whatever the judgment is, which is maybe a little different than we see it, took place in Rosh Hashanah. What we have gotten as a gift, and I want to explain to you why it's a gift. How much time do I have, by the way? When are we done? Okay. Just wave me off when it's time to go.
Okay. You're class, right? I don't want to hold you from class. Why would I hold you from class? What we have gotten as a gift is this separation, if you will, between what's called chesiva and chesima. Why? So the Ramchal in Derech Hashem, the fourth paragraph, is something amazing. He says that every time we have a holiday, what's happening is that from the beginning of creation, everything has divine light. I want to give you 2 seconds on divine light. We think there's 2 worlds, Ruchnius and Gashmius, spiritual and physical. It's not true. There's 1 world. There's only 1 world. If you were looking at, if you were in a lab and you saw water, and they took the water and they brought it closer to a fire and it would turn into vapor. They took that same water and they brought it away from the fire and it turns into ice. You're looking at the same basic molecules. They interact differently, but the molecules are basically the same. We think we live in a world where there's a physical world and there's a spiritual world. It's not true. There's 1 world. When that object gets closer to God, to Ruchnius, it takes the form of Ruchnius. As that object leaves God's presence and it goes further into the world, the molecules, so to speak, slow down and it takes the form of physical. Everything is 1 world. Everything is just ore. Light that comes into the world, and the only difference is whether or not that light is farther or closer to God. The closer it gets, the more it's spiritual. The further it gets, the more it's physical. But life, as we know it, is basically reflections of light. From the beginning of time, God put certain light into the world. And every day, and every hour, and if you really study this, every moment has a different light, which is why Shacharis is longer than Maariv, why Maariv is the Rishus, not Mincha, why in the beginning of the month is a different thing than the middle of the month, why the 7th day is different than the 6th day, why everything we do, it's all, if you take a step back, interacting with the various lights that we plug into the right outlets. If something happened in our history that was big, and we keep it, there's a lot of things that happen that never makes it through. If we're keeping something, it's because there's a light that God says, if you can tap into that light, your life will change. We're not commemorative. We don't do things because they did things. We don't like eat bad bread for 8 days because, like, for the first time ever, a Jewish mother thought about, like, you know, getting out of Egypt for free. Getting out of Egypt and not baking for her kids. I'm like, thanks, Mom. You forgot to bake the bread. Now we're stuck with, like, matzah for the rest of eternity. Not how it works. Something happened that tapped into the ore of freedom, and we do things, say things, act in ways because what we're trying to do is spiritually find the plug within the physical world so we can plug right behind the curtain to the spiritual world of freedom, into our own lives. So what happened on Yom Kippur? Remember the story? Moshe Rabbeinu, Klal Yisrael, greatest shidduch ever, God, Matan Torah. Amazing laser light show. You're in. We're like, yes, Asa Vinishma. Amazing. And he goes, hey guys, here's the deal. I got to go out for a couple days. I got to get the book. He's like, take your time. No problem. We'll hang out here. Remember, he's a little late. Remember that whole story, right? Here's how I picture the story, by the way. My father comes from Syria. My mother comes from Munkash. So I'm like a walking United Nations. With better resolutions. So everything, half of what I eat either has rice in it from my Syrian side or like margarine from my grandmother. So here's the migraine, what's going on, right? It's like Moshe comes down, like, you know, he's like a little bit late, and like all the Ashkenazi Jews are like by the mountaintop. Where is he? He's late. And like, no one's going to tell him that Moshe is Sparty. And when you're Sparty, if you're there on the same day, you're there on time. There's no late by us. If we're somewhere around the vicinity of in the right time, we're cool. He shows up, he's carrying Luke, and says, where's everybody? And they're like, well, we didn't know where we were. We were scared. It's like, guys, I was in heaven. There was traffic on the Van Wyck. You kidding me? Like, he's like, we were scared. We didn't know. He goes, for real? You're worshiping idols? Because I'm a daylight. Remember, smashes the idol, the luchos. Goes back up when? Rosh Chodesh El. When does he come down? Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur was the first time in Jewish history where God said, Salah. It's done. No. Like, it's done. I got it. Forgive me. And what brought into the world at that time was a light called forgiveness. And one day a year, for the rest of eternity, what we have is a day where Hashem shuts down the courts of Din. In heaven, every day, there's one major court called Din. If we can overwhelm it with chesed, it moves to rachamim, which is what Rosh Hashanah is all about. One day a year, there's no Din open.
The Gemara Yom says the word Hasatan, which is the prosecuting angel, is the Gematria 364, because Satan is related to Esav, which is another shear, and Esav follows the solar calendar, and in the solar calendar there are 365 days a year, but the Satan does not have 365 days a year, they have 364. One day a year, God says, no prosecuting. Nothing. You do something wrong, no one cares. Up in heaven, one day a year, free. Yom Kippur. You say sorry for anything on the house. You say sorry and you don't even mean it on the house. You stand in front of me one day a year. It's all access, free pass. Supermarket's open. Take whatever you want. It's a special. One day a year, you come in and say, by the way, my bad, God says, wipe clean. God looks at the court, so to speak, and goes, anyone have an objection? Prosecutors in the Bahamas. He goes, anyone have an objection? Anybody? Can I get anybody? No, I guess so. Free, 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 free. So here's what we do in brilliance. We stretch out the judgment, not because God has to judge us, because before he stamps anything, we want to go through the free day. We want a day where we can have anything. I'm sorry. So before he seals any judgment, we come in and we have 25 hours of on the house forgiveness. The light is like spiritual tide. It cleans anything that gets in front of it. Any sin you put in front of the spiritual light on your kipper, you stand up, you say, my bad. God says, clean, spiritually clean. All we got to do is what's called tshuva. So the question is, what's tshuva? So I'll tell you a story. I have a friend of mine who lives not in New York. And I was there a few weeks ago on a speech, and we sat down and we started talking, and he said to me that he has a friend that lives somewhere in New York, and he wanted to know if I can be helpful. I said, what's going on? He said the following. He said, my friend and I were close growing up, and he's a great guy, family man, wife, children, got him doing well in business, and something happened this year that really threw him off. He got involved with a bad business deal, and it was embarrassing and ended up hurting people and hurting himself. He went from being sort of a respected member of the community to someone that people sort of shunned, and then slowly he started snowballing out of control. He hung out with these people, not these people, started doing some drugs, started coming home late, started yelling at his wife, started being abusive. And all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, this guy, whose life seemed to be going in one direction, hit a snag and literally is snowballing out of control. Separated from his wife, doesn't see his kids, basically living on drugs, lost all his money. I mean, spiraling down. And he's at a loss. And his parents are pulling their hair out. And he said to me, the most frustrating part about all of this is that that's not who he is. I know this guy. I grew up with this guy. He's the guy that was always the head of everything. He's the guy that was always coming up with a new idea to fix it. He was the guy that was crying when we went out to the backyard in like 10th grade and we were playing baseball and the ball hit the bird and the bird hit the floor and the bird was squeaking. He's the guy that stopped playing. He's the guy that was crying for the bird. Abusive. He's not him. And he thinks he's him. He thinks this is the new me. You don't know me. This is my life. This is where I am right now. And his parents are trying to him. Forget what you did. Forget the business deal. Forget all of that. You are not you anymore. You lost you. And he said to me, the most frustrating thing in the world is when somebody doesn't know who they are. Because if he knew who he was, he would stand up, he would wipe it off, he would reconcile with his wife, he would figure out how to pay back the people that he hurt, he would get his life back together. People fall, people drop, people make mistakes. But this is beyond every mistake caked upon him, this black cloud, and now he walks around thinking that he is someone who he's not. Tshuva is not faking who we are to kiss up to God, so God puts us in the this magical book of life. So I can like just pretend for a day or for a week that I am who I am, and then I can get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then as soon as it's done, I get to go back to being who I really am. Tshuva is returning
to who we are. So the question for the few minutes we have left is, who are we? And I believe the answer is found in two words that took place in between one of the greatest exchanges in the entire Jewish history. If anyone who studies the Torah at all, you know that there's two giants of the Jewish nation. There's David and Yehuda, Malchus, Leah, and then there's Yosef, Shaul, Rachel. Yaakov's two main wives had two giants that each are both Mashiachs, that each play a role in how the Jewish people are today, where they are, and what's going to be in the future. The two great people of Yosef and Yehuda are basically the two pillars of how Klal Yisrael works. Anyone who studies even deeper in Kabbalah, you know that Yisod and Malchus are the two spheres that bring all of Bracha into the world, and each one is Yosef and David. The first time these two people went at it head to head, the first time they were in the ring together, Yehuda utters two words that shifts the course of humanity and gives us, I believe, the tunnel into who we are. Let me build it up for your drop. Picture, if you will, it's dramatized just a little bit. Picture, if you will, Canaan. An old man, giant of an individual, Yaakov Avinu, standing there with all 10 big sons around him, and they're in a heated discussion. And the 10 brothers are saying, we have to go down. And he's saying, no. And they say, we have to take Binyamin. And he's saying, no, you can't take Binyamin. Yaakov had just gone through hell and back. He came into this country, into Canaan, and on the way in, he lost the essence of his soulmate, Rachel, who died in childbirth to Binyamin, and that literally changed him and hurt him at a level that we don't understand because he's an of. So when it's the way we see love, it's not the way they understood love. It was soul and spiritual. And she died early and it killed him. But she had a son who was just born, but she had an older son named Yosef who was around 8, 9 at the time. And in order for him to console himself with the loss of his wife, he turned to her son Yosef and said, Yosef, you are going to sit next to me forever. All the brothers are shepherds, but I can't. I miss your mom. And he learned with him. And he built him. And Yosef looked like her and talked like her. And he got him a special coat. And he watched him grow up to being a teenager. And every day that he felt the pain of the lack of the loss of his wife, he turned to at least her son and said, at least her legacy will live on. And one day he tells Yosef, by the way, do me a favor. Can you see your brothers? Just go get them for me. He goes, no problem, Dad. What are you brought? It's like, this is the town. He goes, yeah, sure, I'll be back in a little bit. And he goes out. There's no like text when you get there back then. That didn't happen. And he goes out there, and he's waiting 15 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, 5 hours, 7 hours. He's pacing back and forth. He goes, what's Yosef? I said, how long ago? How long does it take? Tell your brothers to come back. Oh my God. He's losing it. And all of a sudden, he sees the brothers coming in. He goes, about time. And they said, come in. He's looking, going, wait, where's Yosef? And the guys are coming in. He goes, where's Yosef? And the guy goes, what do you mean? He goes, where's Yosef? He goes, what do you mean, Dad? He goes, Yosef, where's Yosef? He goes, I don't know. He goes, what do you mean you don't know? I said, if you like, 5 hours ago, where's Yosef? He goes, Dad, we don't know. We didn't see him. He goes, what do you mean you didn't see him? I sent you Yosef. Where could he possibly be? He goes, Dad, we didn't see him. Remember the story? We found this. And he sees the thing that literally almost sends him to his grave. A dripping with blood, Yosef's coat dripping with blood. He loses his wife, loses his son, and there's a famine in the land, and the sons go down to get food, and something happens. They don't know how it happened, but the guy who's in charge knew about the brothers, and somehow they connected the dots, and he brings them in a room, and he starts interrogating him, and he brings it out of them. There's another brother, and if they're not spies, they have to bring the brother to prove their innocence. And Yaakov is hearing the story, and he goes, no way. I lost Rachel. I lost Yosef. I lose Binyamin. I'm dead. I'm done. He's not gone. It's okay. Okay. Back away. Remember? They come back a little later and go, Dad, there's no food left. We're all going to die. And Yaakov is sitting there. And Yehuda says, listen, Dad, I'll watch. And Yaakov turns to Yehuda and goes, you watch your brother. You watch your brother. You bring him back to me safely. And he goes, you got it, Daddy. You know, your little kid and your mom says, watch your brother. He turns like G.I. Joe. You know what I'm talking about? He's like, you got it, Mom. You and Daddy can go on vacation. I got my brother. I'm 3, he's 1. It works out perfectly. Can you imagine what it must have been like?
watching him get off on those camels, probably. Yosef, Binyamin, I bet you Yehuda, who was a probably coward, had him around his arms. And they go down to Egypt, and they're expecting a confrontation with this viceroy who's caused them so much grief. But it's all different. He invites them in, he sits them down, he gives them each a portion. He takes Binyamin, puts him next to him. Everyone's so nice, everyone's so helpful. They fill up the bags to the top with all the wheat that they need. They don't charge him a dollar.
Looking like on free hay. What can be better than this? This is amazing.
They put the things back on the hay back on the or the wheat back on the carriages, and they start going back home. And back in the old days, you didn't travel at night. You can't lock your doors and go fast in the bed neighbor. So they stopped them to a local inn. And can you imagine what it must have been like? They probably double locked the door. They probably sat on rotation, up every minute, watching Binyamin probably slept in a corner with his 10 brothers surrounding him. And in the middle of the night, just when everyone was sort of dozing off, they hear, bang, bang, bang. Bang, bang, bang. Who is it? It's the police. Police. Bang, bang. Open up the door for police. Can we help you, officer? Can you help me, officer? Look at you. King invites you in, takes you to his private room, gives you the food, and you steal his goblet? They go, what? He goes, really? You don't know who you're dealing with. We're the sons of Yaakov. Yaakov is Ish Emes. We don't steal. And he goes, really? Well, guess what? You're the only people in the room, and his goblet's gone. Guess where it is? Remember they planted it in Binyamin's sack? For those that are the side story, they planted it. Check the bags. Remember? Bag, 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 bag. This is what we call in Hebrew code red. And now the scene turns, but be here. This is Egypt. This isn't a portal play with a bunch of yeshiva guys. This actually happened. Egypt. Palace. Probably marble floor. Huge throne. Probably people with like, the, you know, those like those leaf things, everyone's fanning each other. Some guy in the corner eating grapes. I don't know why everyone ate grapes on couches, but somebody's eating a grape on a couch. People leaving each other, and all of a sudden they go, all rise. And Yosef comes walking in, probably in a throne, and those Egyptian hats with a little snake on it, and he sits down, and everyone sits down with him, and they go, hail the viceroy. And he goes, what's in front of the court today? And he says, in front of the court today is the matter of the Hebrew slave that stole your goblet. And he looks over to Binyamin, who's probably in handcuffs, and 10 brothers, who probably in togas, standing in front of him. He goes, what happened? And they tell the story, he goes, guilty. And all of a sudden, brother goes, say something, your highness, your royalty, you don't say something. Wait, take us. Let me serve, because let me serve you instead. He's so small. After that, he goes, Jews. Gone. Boy's mine. And they go, we have an old father, and he's going to die. If I don't bring down the Binyamin, please. He goes, Jews. Go home. Boy's mine. And he goes, Binyamin. Fine. Go home to your father. Boy stays with me. And 9 brothers turn around. And 1 brother steps forward. And the pasuk reads, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. And Yehuda steps forward, but the word Vayigash is not stepping forward. It's like engaging. It's like being on a line. And the pasuk shah, the simple interpretation of that word is, Vayomar, and he says, be Adoni, excuse me, my master. But the Sfas Emes, who quotes the Arizal, which is fun for the Ashkenazim and the Sfardim in the room, say that's not what he says. Vayigash Elav Yehuda, and Yehuda engaged Vayomar, and he said, be inside me, Adoni is my master. You looked up at Yosef and said, really? Whoa, that was really impressive, Mr. King of Egypt. You were, look at that roar voice that you got. We are so impressed over here. And you must be thinking that these little Jews are going to go scurrying back home to Canaan because we're scared of you. You must be missing something. You see, you're looking at a bunch of togas with behind them a bunch of bodies, and that's sort of where you stop. Let me take you one step further to what's really going on here. Because we may look like we're a bunch of bodies, but let me tell you how it works by us and by everybody. We're made with something.
is something that is what who we really are. Because on the outside there may be a body, but on the inside what I am basically is a piece of not the master of Egypt, but the master of the world. So either you give my brother back, or we have a go. I must have been Brooklyn at least at one point. And at that moment, something changed in Jewish history. You see, God did this from the beginning, because God could have created a world of just angels and everyone just kiss up them. He doesn't want that. And God created a world of just animals, but there's nothing really there except for how they're pre-programmed. But God, in his infinite wisdom, did something so shocking that most of us never ever think about it. It is so beyond the comprehension of the human that many people will go an entire lifetime and never once stop to ponder how insane it is that God literally took an animal, raised it on its 2 feet, and took a piece of himself. All everything, all knowing, all powerful God took a piece, a chelek eloka mimal, of himself and put it inside you. So if our eyes are, we're not speaking to people like, I'm into it, I'm not into it, I'm religious, I'm not religious. It's nonsense. What you have inside you is more spirituality than anyone could ever access an entire lifetime. Judaism is never the religion of becoming. It's never the religion of finding the story in the book to be, and I'm not, and I should be, but I'm not, and I should be. Judaism is the religion of, I already am. It's already here. I never have to be anything. I have to just reveal something that's already a part of me. We are built with him inside us. Somehow, God got put to there. I don't know when this started. God's like there now. So we pray there. We look there. Because the word Shemayim is Englishly translated as up, as opposed to in, which is the way Judaism translates it. God's not up. The plane, God is in. Our only relationship to up is through in. Our only relationship to spirituality is because it's within us. That's who we are. And for the first time in history, a man stood up and said, that's how it works. And then what was born in the world is a concept called malchus. Royalty. Royalty means you walk with the insignia of the king. You don't just bow because you're a subject. You bow because you're an officer. And that gives birth to Nachshon. Remember the story? You stand at the banks of the river, and God goes, go. And everyone's like, we can't swim. We're Jews. We can't swim. It's a boardwalk. What are we doing here in the first place? Like, I don't know what's going on over here. Like, let's go back. And one man says, guys, God said go. They're like, but you can do it. He goes, God said, goodbye. He goes, guys, let's go. And that gives birth, his grandson, is a man named Cully that stands at the banks of the promised land. And God goes, okay, guys, good luck. And he gives him a Jew's like, sorry. You want us to fight like we're Jews. We don't fight. Like, we have talents. We can sue. We can negotiate with the guys. We can heal them in a fight. We can do that. We can eat the whole land. But like that. You're never going to see a bunch of guys come out of yeshiva and, like, the guys come out of a bar being like, yo, the yeshiva let out. Let's cross the street because it can get ugly. Ever. Maybe because, like, their moms will yell at them or something. But, like, never. Caleb's like, guys, what are you crying about? Do you know who you are? Although now, I've been rushing myself. You scared of a little challenge? It's a little hard. I would love to, but you have any idea who we're talking to? We're the Jewish people. And that gives birth to David HaMelech. Remember the story of David HaMelech? David HaMelech's the best story ever. Remember the story of David HaMelech? When did he come on the scene? David HaMelech came on the scene when Shaul HaMelech and his army was fighting a man named Goliath. Remember Goliath? Goliath was the biggest person the Jews ever saw, which means he was probably like 6'2". And he's like standing there, he's like, anybody want to fight me? And he's like cursing God, and nobody in the army wants to touch him. And then David shows up. What was David doing there? Anyone know what was he in the battle for? He was bringing his brothers lunch. Does it get less masculine than that? He's like, hey guys, turkey, you know what you want. They're like, oh, where's the mayo? He's like, oh, there's mayo, I'm so sorry. Like the pickles, you gotta have the pickles at the tuna. Remember? And he's like, what's going on? They're like, well, it's like Goliath, and he's fighting. He's like, I'll fight. They're like, oh, you will. Oh, is that adorable? I don't think so. And they put on a uniform. Do you remember? Remember your little kid, you're in 7th grade, and you're playing basketball, and there's one kid in the 7th grade that didn't even fit into the small. Remember the dress? You couldn't block that kid. You're like, don't touch my son. Remember that kid? David HaMelech, the smallest uniform in the Israeli army, was too big for David. Can you imagine what Goliath was thinking? He's like, really? You're bringing the actuary to fight me? This is what's going to happen over here. And what does David say? He's cursing God. Really? You're sitting down when someone curses God? Someone's in pain, you sit back and watch. Someone's getting picked on, you sit back and watch. Someone's hurt, you sit, really? Do you know who we are? And from that moment until right now, there's always been one group of people as part of our nation that have tapped into the energy of be a donor. That's why we're two generations from a Holocaust, and you're sitting in Queens College, and you're one of 1,050. There's so much happening in Clarksville. Guess what? We have people alive that were in the world when people said things like, the Jewish people are over. And in two generations, we're like 11 hours from the Kotel. Israel's like a first world country right now. And we're living in America, and like now, like if like you go to a gas station and like something in a package isn't kosher, like you're mad at the OU. You ever had that experience? You're like, there's no OU? Like, what are they thinking? What are they doing? They ate pork chops, but still, it should be kosher by now. You know how that happens? Because in our nation, we have a bunch of people that stand up and go, really? You think we're going down? I don't think you know who I am. No, I don't think you really know who I am. Be Adonai. That's who we are. But here's what happens. And funny, it's amazing. The Baal HaTanya in the 7th Perek says that the essence of tshuva is crying to Hashem for one reason. That I took Elokus and I brought it all the way down into impurity. Not that I made a mistake or I'm bad. It's that I am Elokus. The essence of tshuva is Shechina Begalusa, meaning the Shechina is part of us and we dragged it down. It's just getting back to who we are. What happens to us, and this is the key to what tshuva is that we do something right and wrong, and what happens is not the act. As soon as we do something, it cakes on us. This is who I am. This is how I can't. I'm this way, not that way. And every time you do anything that separates you from the connection that's within, in order to actually survive, it's justified, maybe, and on, defensive, and what's around us, what stops us from God is not anything that we do. It's the effect now that it has on us. And the goal of Yom Kippur is just to figure out how to open that up. So how do we do it? And with this, I'll start to end. Rabbi Nachman says the greatest line ever. It says, "Kol merachim al abrios, merachim olav al shemayim." Whoever is merciful to people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is merciful to him. Rabbi Nachman says, who is the first person you have to be merciful to? And the answer is ourselves. You see, we never forgive ourselves. We always remember our mistakes. We're always in the what-if mode. What if I would have, and what if I would have, and what if I can't believe I did, and I can't believe I did, and this is it. And everything that we do, as soon as we do it, we can never let ourselves off the hook. In fact, that's what we come to Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur turns itself into like this big, huge guilt day. We feel comfortable guilt. We feel comfortable in a world where like we have to say I'm sorry because I'm not good enough. When someone says you're not good enough, it somehow sounds right to us. Because the last person we ever forgive for not connecting, the last person we ever forgive for anything is us. And so every time we don't forgive ourselves, the act that we did never gets brought up again. Because we have to protect ourselves. We have to worry about ourselves. We have to defend ourselves. So all the stuff that we've ever done is caked under this cloud of I can't, or it's not me, or they're crazy, or too much, or too little. Because all we really are saying is, I just want to be able to feel like I am still worthy, even though I mess up. And the essence of Yom Kippur is being able to forgive me. I'm not perfect. I said something that hurt her, and I really didn't even mean it. I know she doesn't talk to me now, but I really didn't mean it. I feel terrible. But I can't keep on killing myself for it. I made a call. I went to this place, not that place. I said this to my parents, not this. I was supposed to go out with this person. It didn't work out. I said something. I didn't say something. I've made mistakes. And I got it. I have to let go. I can't walk around with my mistakes all day. I'm a human being. If God wanted to be perfect, he wouldn't make Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the proof that he wants us to fail. Because if we fail, it means we're humans. And for most people, we never get a chance to forgive other people, or we won't even do that. But we never get a chance to forgive ourselves. So what ends up happening when you don't forgive yourself?
is that you never get to the wound. You never get to the point of why I messed up in the first place. You never get to the core. You never feel like you're totally whole. You never feel like you're totally connected. You always feel like you're far. And I have one of my kids. Everyone has like one kid who like needs like an entire army to guard at all times. So one of my kids was playing outside on the scooter the other day, and I was telling him not to go so fast, but he, of course, if I say it, then he goes faster. So he's going fast, and there's one part of my pavement that like goes up a little bit. And I'm like, be careful. He's like, no, Rob, be careful. So he's going really fast. And he catches like the top of the pavement a little bit, and he goes flying. Seven years old. He's wearing pants. And you can see it. It's like, as he hits it, like he scrapes his knee on the pavement. So I come running at him. And he's like, don't touch him, don't touch him, don't look at me, don't look at me, don't look at me. I'm like, let me see. He's like, don't look at me. So let me see. I don't care. Don't look at me, don't look at me, don't look at me. I'm like, I just want to see your leg. He's like, get away from me, get away from me. Don't look at me. He was so embarrassed that like he fell, that he didn't want me to look at it. I'm trying to tell my son, I'm not mad at you. I just want to see your leg so I can roll up the pant leg, and if you're bleeding, I can help you. But he's a seven-year-old kid, so he has to defend himself and protect himself from his father. Yom Kippur is the one day a year we stop protecting ourselves from our father. God says, here's what I want to do at Yom Kippur. This has got to be the best day ever. So here's what we're going to do. I got to get rid of all the stuff that blocks us. If me and you are going to spend the day together, then I got to get rid of all the stuff that you've been running from. So first and foremost, let's get rid of all your desires. All that stuff that you're running after. How to look, how she looks, how he looks. All that, like, desire. Got to go. No tashvish. And you know what? We spend a lot of time worrying about our comforts. Right? The article of clothing that we have that is designed to comfort is our shoes. Back in the old days when people wore shoes for comfort, they would go to the store and say, I need something that's comfortable. God says, you know what? Most of the things that we care about are comfort related. Very few people, Baruch Hashem, not saying nobody, in our modern day world are worried about, like, will I eat tonight? It's like, am I going to get this or am I going to get that? Am I going to go to this place or that place? Is it going to happen to me? It's comfort or a little comfort or a lot of comfort or a little comfort. Is my car going to be a little comfortable, a lot of comfortable? A lot of what we grapple with on a daily basis is just layers of comfort. And God says, do you give it one day a year? Just get rid of comfort. And then there's a thing that we do when all the comfort is done, is just how it looks, right? How does it look? How's it going to look? You think I'm going to look? How am I going to look? Do I look okay? I can't go out like this. I look terrible. Do I look okay now? What do you think it is? If I say this, how's it going to look? If I don't do this, how's it going to look? If I wear this, how's it going to look? If I go here, how's it going to look? How's it going to look? Ma, oh my God, you're embarrassing me. Dad, don't even come into the room. Because of how it's going to look. How it's going to look. What are you majoring in? Oh. What are you majoring in? Oh. Are you doing that because you want to? No, because it looks amazing. How's it look? And what am I doing? A lot of what we grapple with is that if this is happening to me, I'm not here in my relationships at this age. I'm not here at this age. I should be this. Because at this age, I should be here. I should be here. Five people are doing this. I'm at this simcha. Why am I not getting simcha? How it looks. And God goes, you know what? I think you look good. I built you the way you are. You know, you look just fine. Really. Just take all the makeup. And then at the base level, it's, am I going to make it? Am I going to survive? Am I going to enough? And God goes, you know what? Don't worry about that. And one day a year, we get the opportunity to stand in front of our Father, the creator of humanity. And it's just us. No more faith in it. It's us. It's the true us. I don't got to worry about how I look and whether I'm going to be successful or whether this is going to happen to me or whether or not she's... I don't got to worry about anything except for one thing. I got to find me. I got to find that little girl that was ready to take on the world. I got to find that little boy that just saw the world with wonder, who laughed and cried and snapped. I got to find that kid who just took on everything and just lived. I got to get back to the be Adoni that's inside me. So what I do is I say, Hashem, I want to be straight. But I forgive myself. And I want to, as I forgive myself, I want to uncover everything that I did. I'm sorry for this, and I messed up here, and I messed up here. And I was insensitive here. And every time we do a layer, you go Marv, and you do one layer. And you get all the actions out of the way, and then you go to Shabbos, you go another layer. And every layer, you just clean up more, and that light, that Yom Kippur light just shines, and you clean up more. And you clean up more, and as the day goes on, you just clean and clean. You remember 10 years ago, I'm stupid. I should have known.
And I realized I was off. I'm who I am. I know who I am. And slowly, slowly, what you're doing is you're uncovering all that cloud. In Hasidus, it's called a klipa. A klipa is a shell. All the shells that take us from us. And the goal, at the end of the day, is you stand up and you go, whoa, where have I been? I haven't smiled like this. What am I not calling her for? Like, what am I scared of? Why am I not doing this for? Because I'm going to fall? You know who I am? I'm a piece of God. Why am I not doing this? Why am I not trying this? Why am I not... What am I holding back for? What am I worried about? And the goal of Yom Kippur is to get back to who we are. Which is why the rabbis say, Lo ha yuyamim tovim yisrael. Because anyone who's been to a huge fight and you have a long talk with somebody, there's nothing better than coming home. And my bracha to us is that Yom Kippur is not just like, I hope it's over, I hope it's over, I hope it's over. Yom Kippur is a day where by the time we're done, we tap in to that source that's inside us. We tap into the true us. We become the nation that we're meant to be. We stop bickering and worrying. We start becoming the Jewish people that God intended us for, the one that's supposed to change the world. And if we can touch that in Yom Kippur, we can connect back. We can connect back to our original source. And Kodesh Baruch Hu says, "Here's my chesima. What's a chesima? It's an insignia. We walk away with His insignia as we take on the world and we bring light to everyone around us." May it come soon in our days. And Chef Sid Kanu, thank you for listening to me. Thank you.
The emails that will be going out in the subsequent weeks, some of them might be a possible class that was starting. So we ask that if you're interested to reply. If you have any food or plates or drinks, please take them with you. And